Good evening. Welcome to the Jamie Glazoff Show. We are honored this evening to have Pamela Geller with us and Robert Spencer back by popular demand.
Is that applause for applause?
Was your mom asking after me again there, Jamie?
Pamela and Robert, this is a populist show now from the bottom up. We're very democratic, and we let our own guests introduce
themselves.
The
whole world is democratic now. Obama is president again.
Okay,
we're
so Pamela,
now.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure.
Who are you anyway?
This is Pammy G. Come to you from NYC. I'm feeling really empowered, now that I am officially on the government dole, whether I like it or not. I've become a slave because, as everyone knows, what do you call anyone that's taken care of by the government from cradle to grave? A slave. So, yes, I've joined the bots, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I'm right there in my little pod. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Robert, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Comrade Robert Spencer from actually, we're pretty soon going to be renaming it Right Wing Extremist Watch and keeping track of the real terrorists like Pamela Geller and such.
Yes, and the veterans, those awful
veterans. Yes,
gotta
watch them.
Yeah, the troops, and they're also crazy. You notice how crazy the troops are, all suffering from that post-traumatic stress syndrome? They really need to be watched so carefully.
Yes.
Hey, Pamela and Robert, can you do that little script that you did before the show started for our listeners? I really liked it.
Those things are spontaneous, Jamie. You can't read a souffle.
It has to be spontaneous?
It really was, because I haven't spoken to him. Hey, Robbie, how you doing? How you doing,
Robbie? Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, Bobby, where you been? I was down at the schoolyard. I didn't see you there, Bobby. Where you been, man?
Well, I was shooting hoops with Julio. I was right there. I didn't see you nowhere.
No, you weren't there. You weren't there. Your mama, she was looking for you. She made a big Italian meal, man. She'd be looking for you. You ain't there.
Oh, don't pay him no attention. She always says that, and then she goes out to McDonald's.
Ladies and gentlemen,
she's hitting the gin bottle pretty hard.
And I want everyone to be warned that we're going to get those people listening that will admonish me later, saying, this is really a very serious subject matter.
That's right.
And you should be really serious about it, as if I'm not consumed with it, as if 25 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365, every decade in, decade out, that ain't enough. Okay, never took a day off, not yet. Okay, but I have to be serious all the time. I have to
And we have to remember.
I'm the one who's scandalized.
But we have to remember that a woman's laughter is the biggest threat to Islamic fundamentalism and jihad.
And her boobies, too.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a new Battle of the Quran ads. Go to atlasshrugs.com. What is going on there, Pamela? There's these new Hamas-Tahrir Quran ads up now.
It's very interesting because it's almost like with all of the activism that I undertake, you never see really what's coming. For example, when... And it's interesting because this is how Robert and I joined forces. Apart from covering rallies and so forth, but the first piece of the first actual initiative that I did that got me into this work was Aksa Parvez. Aksa Parvez was a Canadian Muslim, young Muslim girl who wanted to lead a more Western life, didn't want to wear the hijab, and so of course her father and her brother murdered her because of it. And she was buried without a headstone. And this irked me so that I had started to raise money at Atlas for a headstone, and Robert loved the idea. And this is how it was very organic how we began to work together. But the point is that what I didn't foresee when I had raised the funds was that, and there's a point to this story, I'm not getting tangential, was that, we created the headstone and gone through all the trouble and made all the arrangements, and then we couldn't. They withdrew and said, I'm sorry, you can't have a headstone. And when we finally got down to the bottom of it, it was because the Islamic Society of North America had owned the cemetery. And so we had to go elsewhere.
A Hamas-linked Muslim Brotherhood front group.
That's exactly right. And so it that became a story, trying to get this girl a headstone. We had, one reader found a spot at the University of Guelph at the Arboretum, and another reader created this gorgeous garden that flowered every different flower, every different. And we got a letter at the last minute saying, oh, I'm sorry, we can't do this, it's political in nature. honoring a young girl who just was murdered for wanting to be free is political in nature. And the reason why I tell this story is because, it, you know, when I had done the anti-jihad ads across the country, but in Washington specifically, the Hamas group CARE created their own ad, okay, created their own ad where they pick an abrogated verse, of course, a verse that's been canceled out, you know, about showing forgiveness and avoiding ignorance. The only thing missing from their ad is my picture next to the word ignorant. What I did was I created a Quran verse too, you know, the Quran verses that inspired the jihadists of 9/11 and 3/11 and 7/7 and Mumbai and Beslan and Times Square bomber and Christmas Day bomber and the Fort Hood jihadi and so on and so on. Now, what happened was, as soon as I submit my ads, they're like, oh, you have to run a disclaimer, the same disclaimer that they have me running in New York. It's this big ad, big disclaimer. It has to be 25% of the ad, and it says, the MTA does not endorse, you know, does not endorse.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now on atlasshrugs.com in your story. You have, soon shall we cast terrors into the hearts of the unbelievers, Quran 3151. There's a big, big disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Quran ad, you can't even see the disclaimer.
In the CARE ad.
Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. In the CARE ad, yeah.
In the CARE bogus, deceptive
Quran, yeah.
ad, the Zakiya ad,
mm-hmm.
You will need that telescope that they have out there,
yeah.
And I guess it's CARE, to see it. And, of course, now this is, in my opinion, I have to, you know, get all of the emails and start to gather the evidence and the data to file a lawsuit because this is clearly discriminatory. They're clearly applying these disclaimers. And mind you, interestingly enough, let's keep going with this. In Washington, MPAC, the Muslim Brotherhood group, ripped off my artwork. And instead of saying, you know, defeat jihad, it says defeat racism and bigotry. So they basically, you know. Now, there's no disclaimer there. And when I wrote to CBS and MTA, you know, Washington Metropolitan Transit Authority, saying, hey, where's the disclaimer and impacts ad? That's a different media form. Meaning, you're not there, Gela. You're not buying the buses in D.C. You're buying them in New York, but you're not buying them in D.C., so there's no disclaimers necessary.
Exactly. Robert, before I go to your profound wisdom, I'm going to ask a question that's very, very silly to us. And yet it just cannot penetrate the mainstream media and our higher literary culture, etc. So this quotation here, Pamela, show forgiveness, speak for justice, and avoid the ignorant, right, that the
mm-hmm.
CARE ad has up from the Quran 7199. What forgiveness was shown to Aksa Parvez? And if that is an Islamic teaching, then why didn't CARE help with, you know, having a grave made for her that you ultimately made a wonderful memorial for her in Jerusalem? But, you know, if this is an Islamic teaching, then where are all the muftis and imams and clerics using this quotation to denounce the murderers of Aksa and to denounce the Islamic theology on which that murder took place? It's just the world is silent, right?
Robert, you taking this one, baby?
Oh, I thought it was to you, but that's fine.
How come you never call me baby?
Because you never sing you never sing that song to me. Just call me baby. And Robert sings it all the time.
Does he really, Robert? Sing it for family.
I've never even heard it. I don't even know the song.
Okay, Robert, you go ahead and take that one.
This is a very important point, actually. The Quran verse in context, you know how they're always hammering us about being in context, does not refer to any kind of forgiveness to be accorded to those who are considered to have violated Islamic law.
Right.
It only has to do with a very limited sphere of things that actually do not encompass at all the relationship between believers and unbelievers. And this is one of the reasons why, as Pamela has pointed out, Islamic scholars often say that this verse is abrogated. It is one that comes in the context of a denunciation, one of the innumerable denunciations of the unbelievers in the Quran. Mm-hmm. And it's enjoining Muslims to show forgiveness to fellow Muslims, not those who openly or defiantly transgress, but those who just are sinning in the course of the day, you know, you might say something that was mildly offensive to somebody else, and or something like that, and nothing major. It comes just a few verses after the Quran says one of the most chilling things that it says, and that is that if Allah had wanted to, He could have guided all of mankind to the truth, but instead He will fill hell with jinns, the little spirit beings, you know, and men. In other words, He creates human beings in order to torture them in hell. And it's just astonishing to me that anybody can think, well, this is the fount and the source of all justice and goodness. It's kind of appalling. But yeah, there's no way that these imams around the world would apply a verse like this to Aqsa, even if it weren't considered abrogated, because Aqsa is not the kind of person it's talking about. It's not talking about those who are rebelling, considered to be rebelling against Islam or rebelling against Allah's law. It's only dealing with minor things.
And if I may add something, you know, what's really astonishing is that we're even having this conversation. Here we are 11 years
yeah.
later. What I mean by that is they're directing the dialogue. They're forcing the conversation to go this way. I don't care if you don't have a cursory knowledge of Islam. One only has to look around. One only has to look around the world. One only has to see the level of conflict that Islamic supremacists are agitating, you know, in tandem with the level of their population. There's just no way that you can avoid the close to 20,000 deadly Islamic attacks since 9/11. And what they do by creating this bogus narrative, okay, this abuse of language, and that's what this is.
Yeah.
This is an abuse of language, and whenever we see this in history, I mean, you saw it with the Nazis. Anywhere there's an abuse of language, then there's an abuse of power. And again, we have this norming of jihad, we have this norming of the Sharia, we have the demonization and the marginalization of those of us who choose not to ignore the threat, not to pretend that it's not there, but put ourselves, our lives, our livelihood on the line and take this enormous amount of abuse for merely stating the obvious, for merely stating the truth. And clearly, it's getting worse. I mean, it's getting worse for us. It's certainly not getting better. The only light that I see, frankly, is...
Robert Spencer.
Well, him too. Him too. But the only light I see is when our organizations, American Freedom Defense Initiative and Stop Islamization, force the conversation, force the dialogue, which is why we do what we do, with ads, with rallies, whether it's Ground Zero Mosque or it's Rifka Barry or it's, you know, the New York Times running the anti-Catholic ad and us submitting the exact same ad but changing Catholic to Islam and being rejected, and that becomes a news story. Being able to go out there in the arena, in the mainstream dialogue, and discuss these things. And that's the only way that you are going to change people's minds. Clearly, the Ground Zero Mosque was a watershed point. A lot of people, I mean, this is a dialogue that, I mean, we were attacked mercilessly for taking, and we still, I'm still identified as the woman that was against the Islamic Center 200 miles away from an attack. They don't even say Ground Zero anymore. They don't even say, you know, a couple blocks. I mean, they don't say mosque. I mean, it's a completely morphed and dwarfed narrative. And this is what they do. And what we have to realize is that this is war, okay? This is war, and these are the bullets that are flying. And to say, oh, you know, to not engage or to have these conversations amongst ourselves, I think it's completely and utterly irrelevant. It's very 10 years ago, and we've got to get an army of Spencers and an army of Gellers doing what we're doing. And if you can't do that, then just, you know, send money to us so that we can do the things that we're doing. You know, these ads are very expensive. And you see how they jerk us around. If you saw the email streams between me and CBS on these disclaimers, you would not believe it. You would not believe it, how I, for a month, was begging them for a copy of the CARE ad. I wanted to see how big the disclaimer was. I knew. So today, after my ads get there and are put up today is when they send me the copy of the CARE ad with their tiny little itty-bitty disclaimer, and then my ad where it's, you know, a good 15 to 20% of it.
Absolutely. And Pamela and Robert, thank you so much for continuing this fight. And my next question in this context is when Pamela says how absurd it is that even 10 years after 9/11, we're still having this conversation, whereas it should have even ended, you know, 5 days after the Khomeini Revolution in 79. But anyway, look, we have a president of the United States that recently said that the future does not belong to the to those who slander the prophet of Islam. We have a, you know, our first political prisoner, arguably, in the United States, the filmmaker of Innocence of Muslims. I mean, it's incredible that this man has been reelected as president when he's clearly carrying out Islamic blasphemy laws. When he won the election the other day, let's just start with this simply. Let me go to Robert. Robert, were you surprised? Are you shocked? Are you depressed? Just tell us a little bit about your reaction with Obama back in the White House.
Well, I wasn't surprised. I didn't think Romney was going to win at any point. The last day, it did seem like things were swinging in his direction, and that was the only time I thought, well, maybe he's got a shot, but, well, he didn't. And it just shows that the what we have to do now is a complete rethinking of our approach. Clearly, the Republican Party has failed. Clearly, the establishment conservatives have failed. And what I see, what I've been increasingly dismayed by over the years, over the last few years, is how these people are wrong. They're wrong all the time. They're wrong again and again and again, and they're never held to any kind of accountability.
Right,
I'll give you an example. I was on Fox in January 2011. It was, I think, the last time I was on Fox. And I was talking about Egypt and Libya, and saying that the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic supremacists were taking over and they were going to establish Sharia states, and those states are going to be more hostile to the U.S. than anything that had been there previously. And Juan Williams was there, and he said, oh, you're just fear-mongering. Spencer's fear-mongering. And everybody else on the panel said, oh, yes, yes, yes. There's wonderful, glorious democracy flowering in Egypt and Libya and Tunisia, and it will create Western-style parliamentary republics that are pluralist and good for women and good for non-Muslims and so on and so on. And look, now here we are, a year later, who was right and who was wrong?
Mm-hmm.
But Juan Williams is still on Fox. He's still trotted out all the time as if he has something to say, as if he knows something.
Bring him down a couple million dollars a year.
Yeah, and I haven't been back. Now, this is not about me. This is just about the fact that there's this kind of willful blindness on the part of the conservative media, that they don't want to admit to the fact that their analyses have been wrong, that they have been wrong, that the whole premise behind the Romney presidential candidacy was wrong, and they're going to still keep doing these wrong things over and over and over, and they're going to keep losing.
Yeah.
What we need, if we really want to start to take back the country, are radically new approaches, approaches that are epitomized, I think, by Pamela's campaigns that go over the head of the media. Look, the left controls the media. The Democrats control the media. The Republicans have been whining about this since the 1960 election. Richard Nixon was complaining about media bias. And it's 50 years worse now. And it's never broken the other way. Ronald Reagan won in spite of it. Every Republican who's won has won in spite of having to fight an uphill battle to get his message out. The media hates the Republicans and hates conservatives and is never going to be fair to them. And so we have to just bypass them. We have to take away their power and go over their heads and
right.
communicate to the people directly. And this is what we're the only people doing this. And these ads are the only things raising the issues that ought to be raised in the public square.
And there have been so many opportunities, golden missed Gutenberg opportunities, to Robert's point. For example, back in 2008, okay? Now, remember something. The media has always owned all of, you know, they never needed the Internet. They had ABC, NBC, 60 Minutes, Gold Standard of Journalism, never needed it. We, on the Internet and talk radio, you know, this is how we're going to circumvent the media. And you see, we did that in 2004. I mean, Kerry would have absolutely nailed it in 2004 had it not been for the blogs and the smoking memo and Dan Rather, National Service Records, and that bogus document. I mean, that was unearthed by the blogs. I mean, and so the left, you know, woke up and said, oh, you know, this is a problem. And they came in and they completely took it over. I mean, when I look at Arianna Huffington, who started a blog 3-4 years after me, and I was ranked, let's say, 20th in political blogs in the world, and she sold AOL. She sold to AOL last year for $315 million. I couldn't sell Atlas of 5K. I mean, they came in and they completely took it over. And I will tell you how they did that, because they cooperated, and the left elites and the left, political left, embraced it. I mean, the political right treats us like we're the crazy ant in the attic, even though we're doing all the heavy lifting. Now, here's an opportunity that I'm referring to, for example. When they named Sarah Palin, who's been effectively destroyed for no good reason, but she's been effectively destroyed, and she basically walked away, which I think is enormously disappointing, but she did. But before that, when everyone was completely and utterly enthralled with her and in love with her and intrigued and interested like they were with Obama, what did the GOP do? What did the old establishment do? Instead of, when everyone was so curious about her, let's say holding a meet and greet with, let's say, 10 or 15 or 20 of the largest blogs, not me, but the largest blogs on the right, with her, as getting to know her, and the forcing, I mean, you would have covered, I don't know how many, killed how many birds with I don't know how many stones first. You wouldn't have gotten a Charlie Gibson and a Katie, the affable Ava Braun Curick, going after her with those baiting obvious questions. I would never have had her on those shows. She would never have gone. You would have forced people to go to the net. You would have shown that in order to get people to break habits, you have to make a new habit. You have to force them, and then they get with it, and then they don't change. You would have forced people to right-wing media, new media. You would have also gotten out a message about Palin that would have been far superior to the enemedia's machine of destruction. But that was a Gutenberg moment, just like the Danish cartoons was a Gutenberg moment for right media, because the mainstream media wouldn't run them. I mean, I went from 400 a day to 4,000 a day because of the Danish cartoons. Those Gutenberg moments happen infrequently. Ground Zero Mosque was a Gutenberg moment. And Palin was. But the right does not embrace these moments. They run. They run like cockroaches as the light comes on. They never embraced new media. They ran from them. They allowed the culture, the left-wing culture, to demonize and marginalize us, which they have done repeatedly. And the fault lies with us. I don't care what anyone says. I'm not blaming Romney. Romney was a damn good candidate, better than I thought he would be. But, you know, he was expecting us, I guess, to do the dirty work on the second and third, particularly the third debate. He thought, he was going to coast on the first debate? No. They fiercely went after him, so he backtracked Candy and Obama on a lie. They fiercely chased the lie. They fiercely embraced the lie. Hey, you fiercely embrace the truth. That's what we do. We have to be vicious, not evil, viciously fierce in advancing the truth. And it is the truth. So what's the problem? But this is something, and I'm going to tell you, Jamie, we have it on our side. The elite right clearly is uncomfortable with the likes of, well, me. There's no question about it. Even leading, quote-unquote, counter-jihadists don't like my message. They'll like a Jassa message. Look, Jassa's lovely, okay? But the bottom line is when a Muslim says, well, I don't believe that, that's purely anecdotal. And that he's not the problem. And we're not addressing the problem. The problem is not a person. The problem is an ideology. And we have to be frank about that. We have to speak candidly about that. And, again, like, you know, the ads, we're doing the Islamo-realism ads now in Denver. And that ad says 19,867 deadly Islamic attacks since 9/11. It's not Islamophobia. It's not Islamophobia. It's Islamorealism. That's what that ad is. So now I'm on, you know, I'm on Denver media, and they're saying, you know, well, you know, it's racist of you. And again, it's hostile media, but you get to go on and say, well, but Islam is not a race. And you're implying that all Muslims sanction jihad. All Muslims are insulted with this ad. Really? That means all Muslims sanction jihad. I don't believe that. We get to challenge them. But this is, how many people actually know there have been 19,000, well now of course it's more, 19,900 deadly Islamic attacks since 9/11? How many people know that?
And all of them misunderstood the message of the Quran, right?
Yes, that's the misunderstanders, yeah.
19,000 misunderstandings.
But to Robert's point, mm-hmm. we need an incredible, rethinking, reshaping, realigning. We have to take now. Maybe from the ashes, this will happen. If it doesn't happen, we will continue to lose. Mm-hmm. I am not all that upset in certain ways. I was quite upset, of course, on Tuesday. I think that was the initial, jaw-dropping reaction that the American people, Obama, bet on the loser and won.
But, Pamela, were you surprised, or did you kind of know it was in the cards?
Well, I was hopeful that day. I mean, okay. It's interesting because I ran a video the last time I was on Hannity, which was in August. He had about 20 conservatives on. He's had them all on repeatedly afterwards, except me, where he asked, who do you think, who here thinks Obama's going to win? And I raised my hand, and so did Steve Bannon. And the rest of the crew all raised their hand for Romney. I was hopeful on Tuesday, but I never thought he was going to win. And I will tell you that there is one good thing, I mean, if you can call it good, is that he will own what he has done. Because what people don't realize is the Obamacare and the tax structure and the debt and the $16 trillion and the abandonment of freedom across the world and the rise of Islamic supremacist regimes in Egypt and in Libya and in Tunisia and so on and so forth. I mean, those chickens have not come home to roost, to quote his pal, Reverend Wright. So Obamacare and the costs and what it means to people, what it really means in the daily social fabric of your life will come to fruition, these poisonous fruition, these 4 years. So will the debt, and so will the tax cuts, and so will the tax increases, and he's going to own it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would have, as Republicans, I would do nothing except work on the resurrection of individual rights and teaching parents to be militant in the schools, to get the battle of ideas back into the schools, to get into the schools. Nothing can happen while you have a generation that is so brainwashed and so inculcated that they are literally robots. They are pods. I don't speak to them so much anymore. I don't know about Robert, but when I would, the rare times I would speak, it was like talking to a Bund rally. It was shockingly frightening. There was no diversity of opinion. There was no diversity of thought. There was no debate. No matter what, there was no debate.
Right. Thank you, Pamela. Robert, I want to ask you a question, but before I do you have a comment on some of the things Pamela's been saying?
Well, I think that's absolutely true, and it's not even just that there is no diversity of opinion, but that there is increasingly violent intimidation practiced against those who dare to express any diversity of opinion. When we spoke at Temple University, which I guess was last year, there was a very violent, threatening protest with these students screaming and yelling and so on, and then ultimately standing up and walking out, and they had prevented quite a few people who actually wanted to attend the presentation from getting in because they took up all the seats, and a few stayed behind to continue harassing and hectoring and yelling at the speakers. And even worse, you have to think about the students who have to live in that. Just recently, I'm no fan of Ann Coulter, but I heard that she had been canceled after having been invited by the College Republicans to speak at Fordham University, that the president of the university in this avalanche of organizations started bringing pressure on the college Republicans not to invite her, to disinvite her. And ultimately they caved in and they dropped her. And it's a disquieting thing that her opinions are not politically acceptable. And so they're not allowed to be heard at a university, which is supposed to be a place where an incredible diversity of thought, of opinion, flourishes and is encouraged. But now they have become these laboratories for lockstep leftist indoctrination, and that bodes very ill for the future. I mean, really, it's no wonder that Romney lost. It's kind of amazing that any Republicans won anywhere after it's been now since the 70s that the left is so has had such a stranglehold on the universities, and they're turning out these bots for the most part, who never really think about these things clearly, but just reflect the indoctrination that they've been given, and they vote for the left. It's amazing that there have been any conservatives elected.
Pamela and Robert, Pamela, let me go to you. I'm having a mental lapse. What was her name again? Mona, that lovely
Elsa
lady.
Elsa Howie.
She was.
Mona. Mona.
I met her in a hub down in Old Times Square where the... You have to. We made a record. It's on YouTube. It's really big. It's huge. Mona Elsa Howie.
Allahu
Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Mona Elsa Howie here is a woman who was sexually attacked.
An update, please. Thank you. Because just before you give us the update, in terms of your themes today, it's incredible. I think if I'm correct, that she once stated that what's happening in Egypt has, in terms of the Arab Spring, has nothing to do with the Muslim Brotherhood, and I think history has kind of proved her wrong. Robert, it's true that she said something along those lines.
Oh,
right?
I have the tweet. I have the tweet.
And once again, nobody holds her to account, and there's no mea culpa. But give us an update. Go ahead, Pamela.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that here we have a woman, Mona Al-Tahawi, who was attacked, sexually attacked in Tahrir Square, and called her attackers beasts. But when I run an ad, calling the war on innocent civilians, and that's what the war on Israel is, the targeting of schools, the thousands of rockets from Gaza into southern Israel targeting homes, the blowing up of a bus in Bulgaria of Jewish women and children, Gilad Shalit, who looked literally like an Auschwitz survivor after being 5 years in a hole in the ground. This is a woman that physically attacked my ads and sprayed them with spray paint. And one of the people that are associated with my organization on my board, Pamela Hall, who was down there filming, interestingly enough, coincidentally, at the same time filming positive reactions to our ads, because all you saw in the media was people saying, oh, no good. But there were a lot of people that loved our ads, stood in front of the ad to protect it from her destruction. And, of course, Mona attacked Pamela and spray-painted Pamela Hall. And what's interesting to me is here you have a Lara Logan who was attacked in much the same way in Tahrir Square, and she actually goes up in front of a group of over 1,000 influential movers and shakers in media and the corporate world and says, you're all being lied to. Jihad, it's not getting better. It's much getting worse. It's getting much worse. But in the case of Mona, I guess if it's Jew hatred, then you can't use the word beast or you can't use the word savage. She is going to be arraigned, I think, on the 29th of November. So we'll watch that and see how it goes. And I would like very much to press charges because those ads were very expensive to produce. Literally the production of them and then having to reprint scores more. I think that people, it's a destruction of private property, and it's wrong. Mind you, what's interesting to me, Jamie?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, hundreds of those anti-Israel ads, which was the catalyst for my campaign. That's what gave me the idea. These anti-Israel ads that ran across the country in cities all over the country, hundreds of them ran. Not one was defaced. Not one was removed. Not one was tampered with in any way. I put up 10 posters, and inside of an hour, they are all destroyed. I think that speaks to the whole conversation. I think that it's a physical manifestation of the conversation, how free speech is being shut down, and the defenders of freedom are being systematically destroyed, and smeared and marginalized.
Thank you, Pamela. We're going to have to go to our callers, but Robert, I want to give you a chance your thoughts on the update on Mona. And if you don't want to comment, maybe sing that song a little bit more about her.
No, Mona El-Tahawi, what I was thinking about, I was thinking about her yesterday, actually, and I think I might write an article called Mona El-Tahawi Could Have Been a Contender Instead of a Bum, which is what she is. Thing
There's
about
definitely
Mona
a
is
Stockholm
that,
syndrome going on, right, Robert? Some
well,
kind of,
it's more than that, because she wrote a very good article in Foreign Policy last January criticizing the Islamic mistreatment of women and speaking forthrightly about how it was justified by reference to Muhammad and to the Quran and so on. And she was roundly criticized by the people who are championing her now and saying how great she is now. They were very angry with her and criticizing her and making fun of her and all sorts of things. Reza Aslan, who is an agent of the Islamic Republic on the board of the National Iranian American Council, which has just been found by an American court to be a front for the Islamic Republic regime, he criticized her very sharply for that piece last year, but he was applauding her vandalism of the ad and calling on more people to vandalize it. In any case, the thing about it is that she had a chance there to really speak up for human rights, the human rights of Muslim women and human rights of human beings in general. But I think that she was afraid that she would continue to lose friends and continue to be ostracized in the circles in which she had moved, and so she retreated and she gave up and gave in.
It's so interesting, too, how... Okay. Why do I... Is that Pamela up to that? Mona. Robert, let me hear
everybody now. Mona.
Thank you so much. What a great song. Who's singing that, by the way?
Actually, I wrote the lyrics, and I sent them to Robert. He piped in, and then one of my readers saw it on my site, and he recorded it, and it came out so great. I met her in a hub down in Old Times Square where you drink Kool-Aid and attack the blasphemers, Mona. She looked up at me and she gave me a spray. She talked like a kafir, but her jihad was great, Cremona. It's a great tune.
Excellent. Our phone lines are jamming in with this kind of entertainment on the Jamie Glazoff Show. 347-857-1380. 347-857-1380. You get the privilege and honor of speaking to Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer. We're going to go to Frank calling from Columbus.
Hello?
Frank.
Yes, sir.
Frank.
Hello.
Baby,
Frank.
Come on, old
Frank.
Blue Eyes. Sing me
Frank.
Something. Hey, old Blue Eyes, sing me something, baby.
I've got you under
Frank,
my skin.
Everybody's been drinking on our show, Frank. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, first of all, I want to thank Atlas Shrugs and Pamela Geller for opening
Woo!
My mind to
yeah, baby,
a whole,
I love you, Frank. I'm telling you, man.
A whole different aspect of news that I wasn't getting from anywhere else. AtlasShrugs.com. I try to tell everybody to go there because
Excellent.
There's so much information there that I don't get from any other source, and I just love her for doing what she does. But so all these people voted for Obama, and they voted for this socialism, communism. And I was looking in the Bible and listening to some people talk, and they said when people refuse to honor God or revere God or love him, he turns them over to a reprobate mind so they can – and he lets them be deceived by the evil. And is that what we're seeing? Is that why there's so many people that – are being deceived by the media? Because when I look at it, I think that I see that they're liars, they're deceivers, they're haters, and all these other people clamor after them. Is that what we're seeing? Is people that have been turned over to a reprobate mind because they don't love God?
I think, I mean, look, there's a lot of, we can discuss religious issues, we can discuss secular issues, just as many atheists and Jews and Hindus, I mean, are all, you know, sort of fallen under the spell. But I will tell you that I do lay the blame squarely on the shoulders of the enemy media. People are intellectually lazy. They are. And this is the easiest, you know, it's a tiny little blue pill that you can take. It's what the media feeds you. It's only the intellectually curious that come to where you are. Now, I will tell you that there's a third of the people that we ain't never going to reach. It's the same people like that Stalin imprisoned in the gulag. And then when Stalin died and they, you know, went into these gulags and released these prisoners and they said, Stalin is dead, you're free. These prisoners were weeping. Not for freedom, but because Stalin was dead. Those people you ain't never going to reach. But there are people out there that are capable of thinking. They just don't have the information. They're misinformed. And you're only as good. Your deductions can only be as good as the your information, as the information that you're given. Yeah.
Can I also mention one other great group that I've been turned on to, which is the Jews for Preservation of Firearm Ownership.
I love those
and,
guys.
And they've lived it, they know it, and they want all the different things in the Bill of Rights, especially the Second Amendment, so we all can defend ourselves against any tyranny if it ever comes to that. I love you, Pamela.
Hey, I love you right back, Frankie. I'm gonna play your greatest hits tonight.
But
honey.
Wait, Frank, one second. On Skype, I can see my guests, and Robert's pouting a little bit. I think he didn't get any praise from you. Do you?
Frank, give Robert some love.
You know what? Anybody that stands for Israel and stands against the Islamization of the world, I love them. We all got to stick together.
Thank you so much.
Frank. Amen.
Thank you.
Robert, you're quite a person well-versed in theology. You want to touch on a little bit of what he was saying?
Well, you know, I always hesitate to say, well, the Bible says this, and therefore we see that happening now. I'm not saying it's not, but people have been doing that throughout history, and there's always a temptation, I think, to see our own age prophesied in the scriptures and to see some sort of a clue to what might be coming next in what's written. I mean, you know, very, very famously in the 13th century, Joachim of Fiore worked through the book of Revelation in the New Testament and applied it all to his own day, in much the way that Hal Lindsey did in 1967 in The Late Great Planet Earth. And they were both wrong. And I'm not saying that the thing has no meaning or that it will come true sometime, but I always tend to shy away from people who make one-to-one equations and say, this is happening now because the Bible says X or Y. The Bible is a very multifaceted and complex book, and it's always a temptation, I think that our age is the one age that is being discussed and is indeed the consummation of all things. But there have been many people before us, and there will probably be many people after us, and I hesitate to make that kind of draw those kinds of conclusions.
Okay, Pamela and Robert, we hear some really inspiring, tingling news about the Arab Spring lately, that now they want to destroy the Sphinx and the pyramids.
Well, they got the nose. They did the nose, the
yeah,
big
they did
nose already.
But, Pamela, let me go to you. What is this desire? What is the? Why do they want to destroy these things, educate our listeners a bit, and how would they go about doing this with something like the Sphinx?
Well, I would certainly, you know, I would certainly defer to Robert on quoting the Islamic text, chapter and verse, on the destruction of, you know, false idols or, you know, idols that are not Islamic. You know, this is a fatwa. There was a fatwa put out. We saw what they did to, how old were those Buddhist statues in Afghanistan? An amazing religious, you know, icon. How old were they, those giant Buddhists, Robert? Do you recall?
I think they were about 1,100 years old, if I recall correctly, but I'm not really sure.
It was such a heinous archaeological crime. I think it could be the only thing that I think is far worse are the archaeological crimes that are taking place in Jerusalem, you know, at the Temple Mount, where they're just literally destroying all of these incredible archaeological finds from, you know, the first and the second temple. But I'm going to defer to Robert on explaining what the religious, you know, motivation and ideology is, because that's really what, at least I'm not going to speak for Robert. I mean, I could try. I could always put my deep voice
Let me speak for Robert.
But what I mean is, I'm not attacking people. Okay.
Okay. Now wait.
My argument and my fight is against an ideology. Yeah,
now,
sorry,
now, one second before we go to Robert, Pamela, make a prediction. If they ever did go about this criminal behavior and destroy the pyramids and the Sphinx, the left in the United States will vocally cry out with indignation and denounce this act and the Islamic theology it's based on, right?
No, they'll blame Israel.
I think you're right. Robert, give us a little bit of background on why they want to destroy the Sphinx and the pyramids.
Well, Islam does forbid representational art in general. And then at the same time, it also strictly forbids any kind of idolatry. And this is considered to be both, because these things were made by pagans in the course of pagan worship, and so they have no place in Islam. Now, people might say, well, wait a minute, then why are they there still, since Egypt has been Muslim since the 7th century, and why haven't they destroyed them up to now? Well, it hasn't really been possible up to now, because it's really only been with the advent of modern explosive techniques and so on that you could undertake a course of destruction, a scheme of destruction on that scale. But also, Egypt has not been ruled by strict Sharia supremacists in the time in the modern period, because you have the Arab nationalist rulers going back to Nasser, and before that you have King Farouk and the British and so on. And so this is the first time that you have together the Islamic supremacists and the very fanatical pro-Sharia Islamic supremacists with the modern destructive capabilities. They really could do away with these things, and they certainly would have at various points in the past when Sharia ruled Egypt, had they been able to. But now we're going to see it. It's a result of, I mean, actually, there are several places in the Quran where there are ruins. It says, go about in the world and see the ruins of the ancient civilizations and see what Allah does to those who don't obey Him. And so actually, Islam, because of those passages, wants to create ruins that are ruins of pagan civilizations, destructive, the remnants of the destroyed pagan civilization, because they see that as a sign that Allah has judged that civilization and has exalted Islam over it. And so the destruction of the pyramids and of the Sphinx is something they would very much want as being a sign of the ascendancy of Allah.
And isn't it incredible that with the Sphinx and the pyramids and this incredible civilization, wow, people are calling out for its destruction based on theology, and Anderson Cooper and Chris Matthews will never have a feature on it. We are going to go to our next caller. Hi, you're calling the Jamie Glazov Show. Name and where are you calling from, please?
Diane from California.
Welcome, Diane, to the show. Do you have a question for one of our callers?
Yes.
One of our guests, excuse me.
I apologize. I just started listening, so I don't know if you've covered this subject yet or not. But I just wondered, Robert and Pamela, if you could give us an update on your friend in England who was imprisoned for standing up to Islam over there. I think his name's Tommy.
Yes, Tommy Robinson. As a matter of fact, it's a terrible situation. All right, he, along with 52 other EDL members, were arrested. You know, just arrested right off the street because they had talked about planned on doing a pro freedom rally.
Yes.
We have raised money and done a very good job, raised money for his legal defense. I have a letter that he wrote me actually today that I will be running to give people an update. he's held in solitary confinement. There was a time where he was placed with hostile Muslims, which is very, very dangerous. Also, no heat. It's freezing in there. I mean, this may sound like little nothing, but, you know, you be in a prison with no heat for weeks on end. He has no shot whatsoever of any kind of getting out, of being released before January.
True.
So that means he will not have Christmas with his family. He's locked up 23 and a half hours a day. He's not allowed to go to the gym or to go to the library or anything like that. He's in solitary now because apparently the hostile Muslims wanted to attack him. I would like very much to go to England just to visit him. I know that he's overwhelmed with the support that he is getting, not just in the UK, but here in America. I mean, he has a very strong following here in America, and I think it's very important. You know, it's always good to know. I mean, I know when I'm getting attacked mercilessly, and I'm not equating being in prison with that. It is Sukkot to know you have people that, you know, stand with you and support you and care about you.
Or are thinking about you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think he has to make a very tough decision. If he's going to fight it, he may not be able to get out until next June. If he intends to fight it, as opposed to taking a plea.
This is all just for protesting. It was a peaceful protest he was involved in, correct?
There are always peaceful protests. I know. I protested with them in Stockholm. Robin and I went over to Stockholm this past summer in August on the anniversary of the jihadist who was going off to a mall in Stockholm to blow himself up, and he self-detonated a little too early. I can tell you that the counter-protesters are wildly violent. The counter-protesters, when we were just having a freedom demo, they were counter-protesting. They were throwing missiles. They were throwing, these explosives, the firecrackers. One cop, I was rushed to the hospital. I don't know if he lost his eye. Last I heard, his eye was in trouble. But, again, this stuff never makes the media. But what the media will say is that it was a violent demonstration, even though we were not the violent, were not violent, but the counter-protesters, the anti-fascists, who is it? Was it Churchill that said, in the future, the fascists will come under the guise of anti-fascism, and that's exactly what's happened.
Well, the peaceful protesters, if I'm correct, they're accused of antagonizing the others, and so, you know, they're arrested instead of the ones that are rioting, right?
That's exactly right. Their existence is offensive to the counter-protesters. Mm-hmm. It reminds me very much of Israel. The very existence of Israel is offensive to the Muslims.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the way it is. My concern at this point is that his trial date is not until January 7th when he enters his plea. And if he pleads not guilty, his trial may not be till May at the earliest. And so he'll be in prison all that time. What about his family?
Able to see his family, correct? He's not able. He's not allowed.
I think he couldn't have visitors there for a while. I think his wife can come to see him, but even so, I mean, you know, it's
And what about the law enforcement? Are they just in fear of these Muslims, or what is the thinking there?
I think it comes from on high. I think it's the same thing that we suffer from here. If you look at the law enforcement here, I mean, not NYPD as much, but they're looking to emasculate NYPD. Mm-hmm. You see what's happening. AP won a Pulitzer for, you know, exposing the surveil program, so they're going to get that program dismantled. You see Petraeus calling up Pastor Jones saying, oh, please, you know, please don't, you know, burn a Quran, and this General Allen. I mean, I'm not happy about the way they've been taken down and smeared. I don't, you know, that's a whole different problem. But these guys really were part of the problem. The Islamic doctrine has been completely embedded in the military. And so you see that in the UK. Those orders to arrest EDL and not the leftists, the fascists and the Muslims that are throwing rocks and attacking EDL comes from on high. That's not being made at the policeman's level.
Thank you.
But you think
we're running out of time, Diane.
Okay.
Very quickly.
Yep. Oh, that's okay.
Go ahead.
I'm done.
Oh, Diane,
thank you
so much for calling. Diane,
thanks,
what do you think? What do you think of Robert and Pamela carrying the torch for freedom in our modern world?
Oh, they're my heroes, and as are you, Jamie. I hope you guys don't get arrested in the next couple years, because that's a great possibility, don't you think?
Robert and
yeah.
I already agreed that I get the top bunk if we share something
yeah.
together.
All right.
Diane,
thanks, guys.
Thank you for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Diane.
We've just got a couple minutes left. This might be a little bit off topic, but in our last couple minutes, I just want to get something from each of you. Robert, some brief thoughts on everything happening with Petraeus at the moment?
Well, it reminds me of something that happened in Nazi Germany. In 1938, the Minister of War, Field Marshal Werner von Blomberg, who was one of the most sycophantic Nazis in the entire German military, he had fallen out of favor because he dared, even though he was a total supporter of Hitler, to question Hitler's plans for world war. And he didn't think that it was feasible, and he thought Germany would lose. And, of course, he turned out to be right about that. And that's he fell out of favor. And Hitler, in the course of things, he found that the guy had married, he actually was at the wedding, a much younger woman who turned out to have a very questionable past involving prostitution and pornography and so on. And so he professed to be shocked. And he had Blomberg removed and exiled. And he sat out the war in Capri off the coast of Italy, and which actually I think was probably better for him. But in any case, the fact is that the timing of this is extraordinary, that on the same day that the House Foreign Affairs Committee announced that they were going to call Petraeus to speak about Benghazi, and he's the only one who knows who ordered the CIA personnel to stand down and not defend Ambassador Stevens. Since it wasn't him, it must have been Obama or Hillary or somebody very high up. But he's not going to testify now. And so either it's just an extraordinary coincidence and Barack Obama's the luckiest man alive, or what we're seeing is something very much like the removal of Bloomberg and the introduction of totalitarian-style politics into the American public square in a way that it has never been present before.
Pamela, briefly?
Well, look, in my opinion, this is directly tied to Benghazi. He was going to have to testify, and you could say, well, he'll still testify now. Now they're saying he won't testify, but the bottom line is, if he does testify, his testimony will be, it's compromised. He's compromised. I don't know about where you guys are, but I can tell you the New York papers are they've just been merciless. You know, cloak and shag her was the front page of the New York Post yesterday. Sister Act today. The ABC News when they ABC. ABC News, when they showed a shot of her, the Broadwell, next to the book, All In, they had used accidentally, oh, I'm so sorry, it was a mistake, we didn't realize. Oh, really? Who did it? A Photoshop cover of her book, and it said All Up In instead of All In. All Up In, and then underneath, her snatch. Excuse me, I'm sorry, it's a family
Goodness
show.
Goodness gracious,
but that's,
this is a family show, Pamela.
But ABC ran it.
No,
so
I don't,
my point is that they've really, they're really destroying this guy. So when he comes out with his testimony, they'll say, oh, look, he's a disgruntled.
Pamela and Robert, we only have a minute left. Please, 20 seconds each. We talked about the media today. I want to end with this. In your opinion, the greatest ray of light as an individual in our media and the most morally repulsive figure in our mainstream media. I'm putting you on the spot, but who can you think of, Robert?
Well, I don't think of it. Can't think of any greatest ray of light, and the morally repulsive ones. See, there's so many candidates: Niraj Rawiku of the Detroit Free Press, Carrie Hus of MSNBC, Chris Matthews, Christiane Amanpour.
Okay, thank you.
On and on and on.
Thank you, but maybe Geraldo's up there as well, especially how he treated Pamela the other day. Pamela.
Ray of light, Pamela Geller. in the media, and most repulsive. I'm sorry. It's just too heated a battle. It's just too heated a battle. I would say Scott Pelley. I would say Eva Braun. I would say Diane Sawyer. They all out. Fox each other, but clearly the black hand is Soros.
Thank you so much, Pamela and Robert. We have 15 seconds left. Thank you so much for coming on. Can we end with you guys singing the song on Mona, please?
Oh, I would love it. Okay, ready? One and a two and a one, two, three. I met her in a hub down in Old Times Square. Let's play it for the folks.
Okay.
Woo!